super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake, mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Well, welcome to tonight's edition of the Grindhouse, and it's a very special edition of the Grindhouse because there was a documentary clip bouncing around on YouTube called 42nd Street Memories, Rise and Fall of America's Most Notorious Block, and I'm in it, and people are emailing me about it, so I felt, why not get the people behind it on to explain what they were doing? People were emailing me because I'm in it, and I said, well, you know, you got a lot of questions, you really should take it to the source, so... Right here, live tonight from Edinburgh, Scotland, if I'm correct, the brains behind 42nd Street Memories, Callum Waddell.
Hey, and thanks for having me here, man. It's a great honor to be appearing on your show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, it's like everybody says they're going to go out and do something, and, you know, a couple people have made or are in the process of making documentaries about 42nd Street, and one of them actually, I don't know if you've heard of this one, River to 42nd Street, River to River.
No, I've not, but I saw a clip of something that looked quite interesting on YouTube. You can find it. I think you might have to put in Mickey Rourke 42nd Street, but there's a maybe about 5 minutes of Mickey Rourke talking about 42nd Street, and they got some pretty good footage in that as well. But I've not heard of River to River. What's that one?
That's the one with Mickey Rourke. What happened was...
Oh, okay, so it's the same one, right.
Yeah, somebody... Yeah. The guy who was doing that was a gentleman named Gary Keyes, and they had contacted me online, you know, and they, you know, wanted, like, you know, you wanted me to come over and talk about it, so we were still doing the Pioneer shows, and I said, well, I'll be down there. If you want to come down and talk to me, talk to me. So they come down, they set up a camera, they start shooting, and they go, oh, this sounds great. Let's go over to 42nd Street. I'm like, dude, I'm in the middle of a gig here. I can't just get up and leave. So they go, you know, what would it take for you to get over there? I go, $100. So I went over, I gave an hour, I walked up and down and pointed out just about where everything used to be and stuff. And the weird part was they used very little of that footage, but they used all the crap they shot at the Pioneer.
Yeah. So what's the status of that documentary, Pete? I mean, is that completed or what are they doing with it?
It's out.
Oh, it's out now. Oh
yeah,
shit.
It's on
okay.
I
do feel like a douche, but I do feel really behind the times. No, I saw the clip with Mickey Rourke. I need to go and get it. Is it good? Is it?
Yeah, you know, it's not as gritty as you know what you're gonna do. Mm-hmm. Because it focused on a lot of other aspects. Like they got stuff like Ruby Keeler in there and. When it was Broadway and, you know, restaurant owners. And then they went down to, like, Mickey Rourke was there. Michael Imperiale was there. You know, they were just talking about, you know, growing up and working in the city. Rourke had a run-in with the Westies down on the West Side, which is a place I didn't really want to go to, but never went down there. So it's a whole different animal than what you're doing because you're focusing on what we all know and love, you know, the whole grindhouse, you know, sleaze fest there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that was intention. I mean, I want to see their documentary. I mean, it sounds really interesting. And from what I saw, the Mickey Rourke clip, they've got some great footage, which has been our problem, is getting footage of 42nd Street itself, which has been a little bit tricky. But you know, it's coming together. And like you said, I mean, we really wanted to focus mainly on, you know, the kind of 60s and 70s, which is when, you know. From what I understand, because I was pointing at the camera at you guys, really, and just learning from you guys. But that's really when you started to see more of what I think has been termed exploitation films appearing in 42nd Street. I mean, from what guys like Lloyd Kaufman and Frank Henenlotter were telling me before that, you were actually mainly seeing kind of first-run films, but you could see them cheaper on 42nd Street, and it was only really towards the 60s and 70s that you were starting to see the sleaze films. I mean, is that right?
Yeah, well, they would have general releases, but most of the stuff that, you know, I remember seeing there as far as like a mainstream film would be stuff like The Dirty Dozen, The Magnificent Seven, you know, shoot 'em ups, because that's what drew over there, you know, action. Yeah, because if you look at some of the marquees, if you can find pictures, you'll see like something that really shouldn't be there in the middle of it, you know, some kind of like, you know, something with Shirley MacLaine musical or something. Sure, that was sparsely attended, you know.
Well, we got some really good footage from Chris. I don't want to pronounce his second name wrongly, but Pojaglia, is that right?
I believe so. He was working for Fango.
Yeah. Well, he gave us some really good stuff, and a couple other guys sent us some really interesting stuff as well. So we've got some footage, and obviously we're going to take some footage from some feature films like Midnight Cowboy and Nightmares of a Damaged Brain, which has got some great 42nd Street footage, the New York Ripper, the Exterminator, some of which we can use as long as we use it under the fair use policy of documentaries. And of course, there's some adult films that have some pretty good footage of 42nd Street.
There's one at the it might be Wet and Wild. It's a something weird title on a double feature, mm-hmm. one of those Dragon Art ones. It's a Michael Finley film, and I do remember seeing it panned up at Marquee's a couple times. So that's another one you might be able to check out.
Well, Frank Henenlotter's been really cool with letting us use some of the something weird footage. I mean, he's also given us the go-ahead to use Basket Case, the beginning of Basket Case when he worked on 42nd Street, which has been really cool. I mean, actually doing an interview with Frank from Scotland, it was when he had Bad Biology coming out, and I was doing it for a magazine, and we just got talking about 42nd Street, and I said to him, I'd love to just do something on this one day. And that's really actually how this came together. It was just kind of hearing Frank's stories about 42nd Street, which weren't even part of the interview. I just wanted to ask him about 42nd Street because, I guess to somebody that grew up in the VHS era like myself, it just seems like such a strange, surreal dream that once you could go and see these films, on this really crazy sort of street where everything went. Although, I admit I was probably too much of a pussy to actually go down there back when you guys were kind of going to see the films. I mean, I can imagine being quite intimidated. But then again, I'm not from New York. I'm from Edinburgh and, we would scream if we saw knives and guns,
Oh yeah, you never know what was going to happen. I mean, I respect the hell out of Frank. If it wasn't for Frank, I really wouldn't be where I am because he was my proofreader with the something weird stuff when I was doing that. He was the one who really encouraged me to do it. So I credit him with that. And also, he's one of the few guys that is still making that type of film.
Yeah,
and it always shows up as this gritty, low budget, grindhousey thing. So.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Bad Biology, man. I thought it was fucking great. I thought it was, just an awesome movie. So
that's actually what made you decide to make the documentary after you talked to Frank?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I was aware of 42nd Street. I mean, I'd read Sleazoid Express and Ghosts of 42nd Street, and there's a fairly interesting book called Tales of Times Square, Josh Allen Friedman. Yeah, he kind of talks more about the sort of show world and the kind of porn side to 42nd Street, which was mainly 8th Avenue, which is what Naomi and I actually, learned doing this. Because I thought that 42nd Street, I thought that a lot of the grindhouses, were actually kind of more, there were entire grindhouses on 42nd Street that just played porn. But I learned that really the porn hub was down 8th Avenue, is that right?
Oh yeah, when you went outside, when you were on the corner of 42nd and 8th, you just didn't make the the right turn up 42nd. You just went straight, and that's where like the Venus, the Capri, all those places were down there.
And I mean 8th Avenue is also from what we've learned from your stories is that, I mean that was a dangerous part, right? It was a bus shelter on 8th Avenue. I mean, can you talk about that?
Oh yeah, Port Authority was like the gateway to hell. I used to call it because. Realistically, back then they had pay toilets, and it was. There's another film if you look at. It's a Paul Morrissey film. Damn, mm-hmm. It's called 42nd Street. What am I saying? And Kevin Bacon's. yeah. See if you can find that one because that'll show you how that Port Authority was because they had little. Now the way it is now, they have one huge, one or two huge restrooms. Mm-hmm. Back then, they had little restrooms off to the sides, and the male hustlers used to use them as offices. So, all this weird stuff was going on. It was dim, it was badly lit, it was like a mugger's paradise. So,
man, I don't want to spoil this stuff, but some of the stories you were telling us were just priceless. They were just classic. I mean, you know, yourself getting stabbed on 42nd Street, and you know the crazy shit that was, you know, because I mean, you were saying that you basically started to go 42nd Street because you were, I mean, what was it? I'm remembering back here, but was it because you were going to go to, you were going to be going to Vietnam?
I figured I was classified at A1. I wasn't going to school. I didn't have a good job. I didn't have any money, so I figured, all right, my fat dumb ass is going off to die in the jungle. So then I had started going over there in like 68, like cutting school. So I graduated high school in 70, and then, you know, I had my driver's license and all the other shit. So I was bouncing between 42nd Street and driving movie theater just to get lost in the whole thing. But more or less, like when you're at a drive and you're by yourself, you're in 42nd Street, you're mingling with all kinds of other cast of characters, and you meet people, you get involved with people. They're just crazy, crazy shit that went on. It just, you know, was basically a part of my life for a long time. It just, you know, it never left. So,
I mean, how did you personally feel when, you know, the street? Because Frank told me, and Jeff Lieberman as well, as you probably know, was not a big fan of 42nd
Street. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, we butt heads on that. Yeah, big
time. I'd love to see you guys alone in the room, but
guess what? If you're going to be at Wasteland in October, you might see it because he's supposed to be coming back.
Oh man, I'd love to go back to Wasteland.
Yeah, did you ever see the panel with me, him, and Dave Friedman and Dave Hewitt where we almost went at each other?
No, I never. Is that on YouTube?
It might be on YouTube. I mean, it ain't bad. He just started defending it, and I basically, because I was, you know, me and Giuliani were friends, and I said, you don't know the whole deal that went down. I do. So
I saw your YouTube one on 42nd Street, and your YouTube one with Ginger Lynn, which I thought was great. Man, I wish I could have been in the last week. Well. That but yeah, I can't remember what I was saying. Yeah, so Jeff and Frank said that, you know, as it went into the 80s, that's when, you know, you didn't go to 42nd Street. I mean, were you still kind of going to see the movies back in the late 1980s?
No, actually, I wasn't. I'll agree with them, because it started getting stupid with the crack and stuff, because these people were like, you know, they were psychotic. And just dumbass shit in general. It just was, you know, what it was too was, you know, a lot of the stuff was available on video then. It was all pop on video, so it was like, you know, why, you know, and a lot of the guys I was hanging out with either died, straightened out, or, you know, they got out of it or got married and shit. And I was married in the 80s too, so it was sort of like, oh, where you going? I'm going to 42nd Street and hang out. The fuck you are, you know? So you know, what I was saying was, what happened was, in a business sense, I was still over there, but I was over, you know, with Liquidators and Broadway and all that other shit. Because I was buying and selling from them guys and going back to Jersey and reselling things. So I was always there, but it was just, there was no reason for me to go back there because there was nothing happening. I used to go to a couple, you know, the bars I was hanging out and stuff. You know, even up until the day I just moved out to Ohio, I was still going over to the Holland behind Port Authority and having a few beers. But yeah, other than that, you know, the whole, once home video hit and it just got stupid, there was really no reason to go over there.
Except I think
business, you know.
I mean, I think that's the thing. I think what's, you know, I can't ever pretend to be any sort of authority on 42nd Street because I'm not. And, I want to make that clear for anybody that says, you know, who's this upstart doing a documentary on 42nd Street? We're not really thinking of it as doing a documentary. We're thinking of it as, you know, kind of pointing a camera at the people that were there and just hearing their stories. But, you know, from listening to these stories, I think that, if I was to give my own opinion, I'm not so sure that 42nd Street would have lasted because of what you just said. I think that VHS probably killed it. I think that, you know, pornography also going to VHS would have killed it. And also, there just weren't exploitation films being made, I think, in the late 1980s.
What was happening was they were all going straight to video.
That's it.
You know, stuff was just going straight to video. I mean, somebody had asked me whether The Forest had played there, and I said, I don't know. I talked to somebody else who was there, and he said, yeah, it did. But see, that was the whole thing. You know, anything that was basically in the 80s, like, I'm trying to think when I bailed. Probably, I might have hung in till 85. Then it just, you know what it was too? A lot of places just started closing up. And then it was like, I only had a couple of guys that were still left that really wanted to go hang out anymore. And, you know, then it got, you know, they were getting stupid with drugs and crap. And I didn't want to get fucking involved with that nonsense. So I was just a smoker and a drinker. So you know, I really didn't do it. I you know, I hit a couple of the bars that I, you know, been in forever, and then, you know, you go back one night and they're padlocked. So it was basically a land grab too with that whole thing.
I mean, I think when the majors started to get in on the whole exploitation thing, you know, when the majors were distributing stuff like My Bloody Valentine and Friday the 13th, so even the gore movies that you used to kind of see in you know, kind of exploitation theaters were playing kind of major theaters now. I think that when that happened, the whole exploitation business sort of changed. I mean, when we spoke to Chris and also Edwin from AV Maniacs, they were telling us that, you know, when they went to 42nd Street in the late 1980s, it was really the canon films that were playing there, you know, rather than what you would have seen, I guess, in the 70s.
Yeah, which was pretty much. I mean, you know, what it was too was a lot of them things, like the Roxy did a quad deal. They cut the thing into like four separate mini theaters, and they were using video projection, which was horrible. Yeah. And it just kept getting dumber and dumber. And then, you know, these places, you know, an excuse was an excuse. It was a land grab. You know, somebody figured out that all these people come in, you know, thousands and thousands of people go through Port Authority every day, and they pop out and they see this. Why not make it into something they can all make money on? That was the whole thing. And, you know, some of the places were there forever. And it just, you know, boom.
It's strange because Joe Kane, who does Videoscope, he gave me some cuttings of the final days of 42nd Street when he was a journalist for a New York newspaper. I can't remember if it was the Times or not, but I've got the cuttings here, and you know, it's quite sad because it sort of says, you know, and another 42nd Street theater has closed. There's now only, you know, four theaters where you can go and see films, but when you see what was playing, I'm not, you know, it's kind of, I think because the films had changed, you could never have 42nd Street back again. Although, let me say that I think what it is now is kind of really horrible, kind of I am capitalism, hear me roar sort of thing, you know. So you've kind of lost the whole counterculture element of it, yeah. Which I think is why people like myself wish we had seen it, you know, because I mean, I can't imagine what it must have been like. I mean, this is something that you can obviously speak about, but I can't imagine what it'd be like to go and see a film like Ilsa and not know what the fuck you were going to see, you know. And then
that's what it was. I mean, you know, like, you know, go see Night of the Living Dead, you heard all about it, and you're sitting there like shitting your pants because you can't believe what you're seeing.
Yeah, you know, I can't imagine what that was like, because now with the internet, you see everything. I mean, Naomi, who's, I should explain, my partner and the person did this with me, and she sends, she wanted to obviously speak on this, but she's back home at doing her day job just now, so she's not in the flat with me. She goes home at the weekend. But she sends her best man, and hopes you're keeping well and stuff. Said she enjoyed seeing you at Wasteland. You know, when we go to the cinema in Edinburgh, there's usually nothing that we want to see, so we'll stay at home and, you know, watch old exploitation movies, which is what we basically do. And you know, you look at the listings of what was on 42nd Street. Again, Chrissy's site, you know, Temple Schlocket, has some of the listings that were shown 10 years, you know, 20 years ago or 30 years ago. And there was some pretty cool stuff. I mean, you know, we're looking at listings from like 1970s and stuff, and you could see Italian cannibal films, you could see, you know, 35mm, you know, kind of classic porn, you could see you know, kind of imported films from all over the world, and, you know, also but really good kind of American horror films or American weird films, you know, the sort of stuff that Something Weird Video now specializes in, you know. They were all playing on 42nd Street, and it's just kind of, I think that's the kind of loss. A lot of these films will probably never be seen in 35mm in a cinema again, you know.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, you know, the strange thing is a lot of this stuff, you know, that people don't realize slipped through the cracks. Like, I can throw one out, a film called The Corrupt Ones, with Robert Stack, Elke Sommer, and there's a few other big names, and it was shot, you know, it's a European production, but that was one that used to run over there all the time. And, you know, your spaghetti westerns, those West German Edgar Wallace things that used to pop up here and there. So it was a mix of everything.
What were some of the kind of biggest shocks that you know, you kind of had on 42nd Street? I mean, you know, you mentioned Night of the Living Dead, but did you see Last House on the Left before it kind of had word of mouth around it? I mean, did you see that for the first
time? Yeah, I saw it on a double bill with Night of the Living Dead.
Okay, that it must ran, have been interesting.
Yeah, that fucked a lot of people up. You know, the worst thing I ever saw was Fight for Your Life, because I thought, I got to get the fuck out of here before they come.
Who was it? Was it Steve Puchelski that said you couldn't pay him to be the only white face watching that film in Brooklyn? I can't remember.
I didn't know what I was getting into.
Yeah, go on.
No, I was half fucking shit faced when I walked in the thing. Then I see this thing unfold, and I'm like, this is not the right fucking place for me to be right now.
Do you remember the cinemas that you saw stuff like Fight for Your Life in? I mean, was there, was, you know, like, can you associate that with the Apollo or, you know, the New Amsterdam?
That was the Empire, I think.
Okay.
Empire, I'm pretty sure. You know what? It's weird because people go, well, how come you don't remember? I says, I said, I didn't pick out a fucking newspaper and go, oh, look what's playing at the Liberty. It was like, I came out of wherever I was. I looked up and I go, okay, that looks good. And I went in. I never paid no mind half the time to where I was going, except I kept remembering the Liberty because all the sleazy shit they had. And then the Apollo, you know, we were bringing people, you know, we were telling people about Ilsa. They get drunk in a barn and bringing them to see it. So that, you know, I remember a lot. What was the one that Frank said? You know, I can't remember it, but I was in it. That you could see this daylight through the ceiling.
Oh, I can't remember.
Tell you about that one?
Yeah, he did. I can't remember. If that was in New Amsterdam or the. I can't remember. I think it might have been in the New Amsterdam. I know that when Disney went into the New Amsterdam, there were holes in the ceiling. Apparently, and you know, kind of, there was frozen icicles as well due to the bad weather in the New Amsterdam. Frank told me the great story. It's actually on Exterminator, the UK Blu-ray of the Exterminator. We filmed Frank on 42nd Street, and Frank told me that in the New Amsterdam, he was watching Frankenstein's Castle of Freaks, and this woman kind of shit herself. So there was her released bowel movement in the theater, which. You know, made everybody run upstairs and kind of go up to the lobby. Did you have any bad experiences in the toilet? I mean, what happened if you really needed to take a piss in one of these theaters?
Well, you know, I check it out. I mean, if there was no light in the fucking place, to hell with it. I just, you know, rule of thumb was like, you know, guys used to, you know, either get an empty soft drink container or an empty popcorn thing and just sit there and piss in that, put it on the floor.
Oh, man.
Which, you know, I learned that from something.
Don Edmonds told me that Vincent Canby went down to 42nd Street to review Ilsa, which I think is a bright story. Don said he had this picture, this kind of like leading newspaper critic, sort of, you know, kicking kind of, you know, junkies out of the way to get in there, to get into the Apollo. I mean... Was the weird thing is, though, you know who was interesting that we interviewed was Terry Levine, because Terry Levine told me that his theatres were very clean, very safe, and, you know, all these legends about 42nd Street are fictitious. So I'd be quite interested in your response to that.
His stuff played at the Liberty. Terry, you know, I love what he did, Dr. Butcher. That was Aquarius releasing. Make them die slowly. The motto's buried alive beyond the darkness. That all played at the Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Not that, you know, you'd get stabbed at the Liberty, but, you know, these played, you know, what the fuck? Come on. I mean, some were worse than others. I mean, you know, the Roxy was always a shithole. The Anko was always a shithole. The Apollo, they actually had security.
Really?
Yeah. For a while, anyway. The
Anko and the Roxy were the ones that I think people singled out as being the most dangerous. I mean, why was that? What were they kind of? What differentiated them from the other ones?
I went in the Anko once and got ripped off. I never went back. I'm not stupid, but I was a young kid then. And, you know, Michael Weldon says, oh, this great stuff played there. I go, yeah, well, you fucking go in there. You know, what the hell? I'm pretty sure, you know, if I'm trying to map this out in my mind, that we're walking down 8th Avenue toward 42nd Street, and you're on the right-hand side of the street. You had to walk past the Shoeshine Stands from Hell and the Anko. Because I remember always walking, you know, because I remember when they were showing Let Me Die a Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, who the fuck would want to see this? So
did you go and see it?
No. I went to see something else, and somebody put a razor blade against my fucking neck. And give me your money, Eli. Here's $3 whole. That's all I got. Bye. Never went back in there again.
The Doris Wishman film maybe would have been a better choice in retrospect, rather than the Razor.
Yeah, well, that was, you know, the thing with the only, it was, I think I read this in Bill Landis' book, as you might have, that I found out from somebody else too that it was true, that if you ran out the exit of the ANCO, basically you're an alleyway behind all the other theaters, so you could probably find a loose exit door and run in there and hide. So mm-hmm. what happened was somebody would rip you off in there and take you off out the back door. Mm. So, yeah. Yeah, you interviewed a ton. I mean, you interviewed, who was the worst guy you had to interview as far as, you know, having an attitude and shit?
Besides me. No, you were great, man. You're fantastic. I mean, you've got more time in the trailer than anybody else. And Amy was going through it and going, Jesus, Pete and Frank could just do this thing together. Okay, well, look, here's the thing. I don't really want to get into slagging people off, okay? But we interviewed a certain director from New York whose name I won't mention because it's as just kind of pretty cunty. But we went and interviewed him, and he spoke about certain things that we wouldn't put on camera whilst extremely drunk, and we deleted his tape. And the weird thing is, you know who I'm talking about, but don't say his name because it's kind of wrong for me to do that. But yeah, I emailed you after we interviewed him. I said, Jesus Christ.
Oh, I'm trying to think who the hell it was.
I'll email you afterwards and tell you. It was just one of these things like, oh, that wasn't a good idea.
I don't remember. I'm trying to think who the hell it was. New York director.
Everybody's guessing now, so don't think too hard.
Yeah, I know.
But I will email you.
Is cop in the phrase somewhere?
Cop?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
No, okay. Oh fuck, why am I trying to guess this shit then? You know, this will be another. Gee, the 20 minutes they were trying to guess a director who was a douchebag. Okay.
Oh, it wasn't that he was a douchebag. He just, what am I saying? He was a douchebag. He just said some things that were a bit, you know, kind of made you want to take a hot bath for several hours, you know?
Oh, about what he was doing over there?
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, well. People, you know, you know what it was? I don't, you know. Frank is a huge, huge, huge knowledge base of movie stuff because he, you know, that's what he did. I mean, he was over there. I think he absorbed like a sponge, like to a certain extent I did. But, you know, my flip side was I was a partying motherfucker. So, you know, that was checking out movies in between getting drunk and getting laid and getting stoned. Yeah. You know, so.
What was it like around The Birth of Porn? I mean, I think it was Jeff Lieberman that said, obviously Deep Throat opened in the World Theatre, so it didn't open on 42nd Street. But I mean, what was it like around then, you know, like the early 70s? I think, you know, I kind of think The Birth of, you know, hardcore is pretty interesting, you know? People were going to see these films.
Yeah, well, there was stuff out before Deep Throat. It's just that was the one that, you know, popped the whole floodgate open. I mean, the first, you know, one that was getting more recognition was that Mona film.
Yeah.
Going back. So that was one of the first ones that started getting, okay, people were saying, oh, this is actually a feature. Oh, there's actually a plot. Oh, it's just not fucking and sucking. So, but you're still, you know, still running the risk of getting busted for it. But, you know, you look at like, that was 72. And mm-hmm. you look at a bunch of other, like, you know, we call them storefront features because they were like, you know, under 60 minutes or a little bit over 60 minutes. But mm-hmm. there was a lot of stuff out at the same time. It's just mm-hmm. this is the one that, well, you know, the whole premise of the clip in the throat and whatever, it worked.
Yeah, I mean, nobody really remembers Mona. Nobody really talks about it. I mean, I think it's mentioned in some kind of historical books, you know, but nobody really talks about it or mentions it. You know, Deep Throat's now seen as kind of year zero for that sort of thing. But
Not to speak ill of the dead, but Linda wasn't that good looking. You know, she was like this little hippie, you know, hippie chick and stuff. The other one,
I agree, man. I don't think she was good looking either.
You know who was actually supposed to have her role? Carol Connors.
Ah, interesting.
She was originally supposed to get it, but when Linda did the, you know, make the salami disappear trick, she got it. But you know, originally it was Carol Connors.
And then, you know, they're doing a film, Linda. It's coming out. I don't know if it'll be out next year. I just heard that Adrian Brody's going to play Harry Reams, which I think is a very strange casting choice. But be interesting to see.
I don't know. Is that the one that's based on Eric Danville's book?
This one's Inferno, the Linda Lovelace story. I don't know if it's going to be based on Ordeal or not. Because I think she's sold the rights to it.
See, Eric Danville is a friend of mine. He wrote the complete Linda Lovelace. And they're supposedly basing one movie on that.
It's weird you should mention this. I checked out his site just last night because that's getting re-released. He's re-released it this year, right?
Yeah, he was supposed to. Well, he was going to make it to Wasteland with it, but it never happened. He was going to bring the art.
I want to get a copy of the re-release of that. I think any story on Linda's interest, I just think it's very strange that they've taken so long to get it made, because I remember they're trying to get this thing made back in the 90s with Courtney Love as Linda Lovelace, and that never happened. And then, you heard a couple, like last year, it was going to be Lindsay Lohan. And
she does it in real life, and she don't really, everybody says she's hot. To me, she don't really look good naked.
You mean Lindsay Lohan?
Yeah, I don't think she looks that good naked.
I think she's kind of hot, but I thought, when I saw her Playboy shots online, I thought they'd airbrushed the hell out of her. It looks like somebody else. It looks like her face stuck on somebody else's body. But I think she's cute. I don't know, cute maybe instead of hot is would that be a better term?
I don't know. To me, she's just another one of these, like, Paris Hilton. I forgot my underwear, so let me spread my legs while I get out of the car.
Oh man, I did a press conference with Paris Hilton once. That was really funny because the journalist wanted to ask her about her sex tape, and she was getting really pissed off. I mean, she was getting so upset about it. And eventually, the moderator kind of said, you got to stop this. Paris has done other things. She doesn't want to speak about her sex tape. So, poor girl. I say that ironically, obviously. But so. Tell me about that. So you had more. I mean, when did you notice that some theaters were kind of doing the porn thing? I mean, you would have been around, I presume, for Behind the Green Door and The Devil, Miss Jones, and Misty Beethoven.
That was before that though. Stuff was just popping up. See, the other one, it was like actually better looking than the Lovelace was Tina Russell, and she did a film, and I can't for the life of me right now remember off the top of my head, but she thought this was going to be the one to push her, above Linda. And it didn't, because I think, if I remember rightfully, I think it was directed by, it might have been Toby Ross, and that was the first straight film he did. He had been doing gay porn up until then. Not that there's a knock on anybody, but I don't know. She didn't take it too well. So, but, she was actually prettier than a lot of them. She winds up in a lot of Mark Stevens, Jamie Gillis loops, coming across.
Okay.
She was a lot prettier.
Than Linda?
Yeah.
I never thought Linda Lovelace was I never thought Georgina Spelvin was an attractive lip. But I think that's what makes kind of that era interesting, because you obviously had a mature woman kind of
Georgina was actually on the show. You can probably get the archive interview with that, because she doesn't do interviews.
Yeah, I know. I tried to do an interview with her when her book came out. She wouldn't even apply to me.
No, she's like, what happened was, she got into it late in life. I think she might have been 38 or something when she did Devil. And the whole thing was, she wasn't even supposed to be cast. She was the caterer.
Yeah.
And Jerry Damiano saw her and took her aside, and they were talking. She had done one film, with Mark Stevens prior to that. So, the whole thing just took off for her. And what happened was, somebody contacted me about the book, and I said, I got a radio show now. I had met her years before. As a matter of fact, she had done a convention on the East Coast, and I had sent over a bunch of Devil and Miss Jones VHS for her to sell, because we were, Liquidators were there. So anyway, they go, well, she doesn't do any interviews anymore. So she sent me a book signed. I read it. I loved it. I put it over on the show. I put it over in print a couple places when I was still getting published. And I get an email, Georgina would love to do the interview. So it was cool. And when Jamie Gillis passed away, she graciously called in and shared a couple memories of Jamie. Mm-hmm. So she was hoping she's in her 70s. She doesn't want to bother with this,
No, I thought her book was pretty, you know, in depth. I didn't think it left a lot of things unanswered, to be honest. And I understand that. What happened was when we're doing a documentary, I thought that, you know, obviously we needed to touch on pornography in the documentary, because it's a big part of 42nd Street, and it's a big part of kind of exploitation lore. I think that a lot of people, especially when you read books on exploitation, because this is my entire, I'm doing a PhD just now in exploitation, and I think when you read a lot of books on it, you know, some people sort of, actually most writers kind of try and, you know, separate genres, and I'm not so sure that's the best thing to do, because as you'll know yourself, you know, in a lot of these theatres, there was not a theatre that just did, you know, horror, or just, you know, did kind of, you know, Italian cannibal films or whatever. You know, these things were mixed up a little bit more. So I think that, you know, looking back historically, it's that, you know, you've kind of got to get to the bottom of that a little bit more. And so, you know, we obviously wanted to touch on pornography. So my initial thing was, you know, to email Sharon Mitchell, because, you know, I knew that she was still around and I knew how to get in touch with her. Yeah. And the other person that I wanted to get was Veronica Hart, who I had the phone number of, because I'd interviewed her recently. She'd done a film called One-Eyed Monster, which is a kind of sci-fi comedy film that had Ron Jeremy in it as well. So I managed to get in touch with Veronica by phone. We didn't get Sharon, but we got Veronica Hart, and she brought John Skip around to our hotel room in Los Angeles, and we filmed them both. And Veronica was great, man. Her stories are just really eye-opening and really amazing. I mean, you know, she's a really tough cookie, and I think she's a good actress as well. And you know, she was telling us some really interesting, funny stuff that I think is going to, you know, be quite revealing to people. You know, I mean, she did live sexuals in 42nd Street. You know.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
They all used to. Well, I don't know if she did. You know, she was at the. As far as, you know, fucking on stage, I don't know if she did that. I know, like, these guys, like her, Sika, Vanessa, they all used to appear and do a strip.
Okay. So, mm-hmm.
I don't know if she did live sex,
but I don't know if she did it on 42nd. You know, she would have done it off 42nd Street, because I know, obviously, as I said earlier, a lot of the porn theaters were off 42nd Street. But, you know, she talks about that, which is, you know, kind of eye-opening and interesting, you know. So, I mean, there's lots of... And that's the other thing. Like, I read on your Facebook page, somebody, you know, had a go at us for having Tony Timpone in the documentary, because, you know, they said, oh, Tony's never liked 42nd Street and stuff. But that's, you know, that was really part of the arc. We didn't want to just have people that kind of said, oh, it was the greatest thing ever. I mean, we wanted some people that said, oh, it was horrible. And Tony actually doesn't say that. What he does say is that he used to have to run down it because he was terrified of you know, kind of walking slowly down it, which in itself is kind of funny. And like I say, you've got Jeff Lieberman. Jeff Lieberman thinks it should all be Starbucks now. You know, it's...
See the sleaze going. Like sparring, you know, partners. He wants to be on my show, and I said, fine. And I told, you know, Ken Keish, and he goes, well, get me on too, he goes, because we'll gang up on him.
It's funny because Jeff's infamy is, you know, I think he's done some great movies, but, you know, that's kind of come from the 42nd Street era, you know? I mean, you know, that's it, you know? People remember Just Before Dawn and Blue Sunshine as these kind of, you know...
Squirm was the biggie, man. Squirm was it.
Yeah. I mean, I saw Squirm when I was a kid. I thought it was awesome.
Fucking big fucking letters. Squirm! The Night of the Killer Worms is on us.
That's the thing. So that's kind of, you know, I think it's a legacy to embrace, you know. But like he said to me before we did the interview with him, he said, you know something, I tried to avoid going down that street, you know, but I'm happy to speak about it. So he gave us a pretty good interview. But, you know, I wish we could have got the mayor. Who is it? Mayor Giuliano?
Oh, Mayor Zakhir?
No.
Rudy Giuliani. Oh, yeah, that would have been great.
That would have been interesting, eh? I wonder what he would have had to say for himself.
They, you know what it is? It's just the cycle of things. I mean, you know, we can lament all we want, but the bottom line is it was bound to happen eventually. It just, everybody got pissed when it happened. And the other thing was, like I say, there was a deal that was supposed to be cut where they were said everybody go down by the waterfront, you know, down by the river. And all of a sudden, then he puts that thing, well, you can't be within 1,000 feet of each other. I'm like, what the fuck, you know? So even when you go over there now, I mean, you walk down every side street. Every side street's got a little mini porn store there.
Yeah, yeah.
So what did it accomplish? Nothing. It's just, you know, it's just still magazines, DVDs, and they got the peeps. You know, God only knows why somebody would want to go in a booth and jerk off. But, you know, hey, knock yourself out, you know.
Well, wasn't there there was a peep world on 42nd Street up until just a few years ago, though, wasn't there?
Yeah, that was the last one that got shut down.
Why do you think it kind of held out so long?
I don't know. It was like 2003 was the end of everything. Screw went under. My boss and Liquidators died because we were wholesaling the shit to the whole city at one point. And Peepland, Peep, whatever the fuck it was, Peepland, Peeparama, Peep, whatever the fuck. But
the only thing that still seems to be around is Show World, but that, I presume that must have changed a lot since.
No, they moved it down the street.
Okay.
It's not on the corner of 42nd and 8th like it was. They moved it like almost a block down.
Yeah, yeah. I got hands up. I didn't realize that, man. But yeah, thanks.
I didn't know either. It's they sell. What the hell was that? Somebody was telling me it's a comedy club and they sell luggage. I don't know. No, it's just weird because, you know, that was like the one. See, for some reason, they only shut that down once. That was the whole thing when AB made this big thing. They shut him down for a sprinkler violation. They showed up with 50 cops and a padlock. That's how fucked up the whole thing was. But, you know, that thing was built undercover and nobody really knew what was going on and ta-da-da. But, you know, the weird part was it actually made the neighborhood better because it was all clean.
Yeah, you were saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you that did you was it true also that when they had the feminist marches in the 70s, Show World was even encouraging that because it kind of wanted it wanted the other places to kind of go out of business and the feminists weren't going down to Show World because it was, you know, kind of cleaner, it was a little bit, you know, more.
I know, you'd see some people would bring dates in there, it was ridiculous, but what the fuck. But yeah, what happened was that was also the first place to come up with the tokens instead of the quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, junkies would go in there, you know, you got like $30, $40 worth of quarters in there. They go in there with a screwdriver and wreck the fucking thing to get the quarters out. So then they came up with that hexagon little brass thing, you know, that was a quarter. That was like Show World quarters. And what happened was that spread out. I got the funny feeling because a couple of these bigger places kept popping up that somebody ran the whole deal. It was probably the mob or whatever, but, you know, basically these bigger places popped up and they were all three floors. So, mm-hmm. And one right across from Show World, I think that was the gay complex or something.
Mm-hmm.
There was all kinds of weird shit. There was a place, if you walked up 40, well, wonderful movie theater, The Harem, which was open 24/7, which is a complete fucking scuzz fest. And then you walk beyond that, and there was Show Center that had trannies in the fucking peep shows. So
It's kind of interesting though, isn't it? Because it's sort of like there's something for every kink or perversion, and
Peep World had was it Peep? Yeah, Peepland was the one that was over the old Hubert's Freak Show,
mm-hmm.
And you know, in keeping with that whole freak motif, they had all kinds of fucking weird, sick shit in the peeps. You know, bestiality, midgets, pissing, shitting, all kinds of crap. That was a real fucking scuzzy place. I mean, Blackjack was scuzzy too, but some of these places were in a class by themselves because it was like me and Frank were talking about the snuff loops, or, you know, he says they were fake. I don't know what the fuck, but something else was going on. But they would bounce from Crossroad Books to Blackjack, and there was a place below Port Authority that I fucking didn't even care about because there was no, you know. Well, there was no movie theater, so I didn't give a shit. I never went down there. But these things would bounce all over the place. But Blackjack was like a real den of iniquity. And Crossroads Books, that was one of the big purge deals, like in Europe. It had to be like toward. I remember being in there during the bicentennial, so that was 76. Had to be a couple years after that. They just. It was a big push by the city. They closed that. They closed another place called Fun City Books and some other bar. So it was.
Okay. I mean, the thing I wish they had done is I just wish they'd kept the cinemas. You know, I mean, it just seems that it's a bit. you know, it doesn't look good now. I mean, you know, to anybody that's listening who hasn't been down for it 6 years.
It doesn't fit with their, you know what used to make me laugh, and I've said this before, about Giuliani's big bitch was that it's all garish and bright and glittery and neon. Well, what the fuck is it now? You know? It's like daylight.
It's kind of like a playground for really rich assholes, I think. I mean, you know, the shows are expensive. Everything's kind of, very corporatized. And I think when I look at picture of the old 42nd Street, maybe, again, because I wasn't there, there just seems to be something pretty, arty about it. It looks good,
Yeah.
I think it looked really cool.
It was, it just was like that era of Frozen in Time was a slice of life, and it just... You know, for years, it just, I would say, I'm trying to think when I started going over there, it had to be like 68, and then, 68, 78. I'd say for 20 years, it was almost frozen in time. Mm-hmm. They weren't changing nothing. Every once in a while, a new sandwich board marquee would pop up, which everybody said sucked, But, it was pretty much frozen in time, and then, it just happened. It was like, it's over. You got to remember one thing too. They were trying to shut down that block since the 20s, I think. It was always the bane of the city.
Did you ever do like an all night kind of? Did you ever stay all night in a movie theater or anything?
Oh yeah, yeah.
What was it like? I mean, did you see homeless guys sleeping in there and kind of?
Oh well, what it was. I'm trying to. It was actually. I wrote this. It's in the Something Weird Blue Book. I documented like 12 hours on the deuce, like getting over there and not coming back. Like, too late to even try to do anything. Like, just bouncing from here to there to everywhere, then wind up seeing Ilsa for like the ninth time, and then getting out of there like 1:30 in the morning, and it's starting to rain, and where do you go? Well. I want to go to the harem, even though that's open 24 hours because it's too creepy. So you go to the Venus. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, $5 to get in. You stay dry and you stay away from everybody.
I mean, we asked you this in a documentary, but what do you think are the films that really typify 42nd Street? If somebody was to try and do a movie marathon or something, I think you said Make Them Die Slowly, Neil. So, I don't know if you've there's other films you'd pinpoint as being.
Was it
yourself as well that said Eaten Alive, the Toby Hooper film, kept showing on 42nd Street, but under different names all the time?
Yeah, the Toby Hooper one. Yeah, that was like Eaten Alive, Legend of the Bayou, Horror Hotel, Starlight Slaughter. I don't know how the fuck they got away with that, but it just kept going on. All right, well, to wrap this up, when do you think we're going to see this?
Hopefully next year, just to, tell your listeners, this was a no-budget documentary. Somebody's put an IMDb that I had $20,000 to make this with. I wish I had $20,000 to make this with. We shot this on no budget at all, as you know yourself, when we were over in America shooting for Arrow Video. So it was done just, on a whim, and you'll see it next year, man. And like I say, greatly honored that you're a part of it, and it's been good speaking to you. I hope you have a really good 2012, and I hope we hook up again.
Yeah, definitely. As you get closer, let's touch base and get on and see how far you're gone. That's cool.
Yeah, bring Mamie on and get the female standpoint of all the films.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we're open to that. We're good for everything. We want to put it out there for the fans. We feel if something's good, be it movies, wrestling, whatever, we want to put it up. We want people to hear about it. So that's why we do this. Plus, I thought you were cool people, so that's why I did it. And I wanted to promote this thing. The funny part was in closing was. Somebody emailed me right after it was done, and I go, "Hey, what do you know about this this documentary called 42nd Street Memories?" And I go, "I don't know." And he goes, "Why? You're in it." I'm like, "Oh shit!" So many people shoot so many things, and you get lost in the shuffle. I'm like, "What the fuck?" So yeah, but it's all cool.
Well, thanks, man. Like I say, have a really good 2012, and thanks for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. It's good to have you as a friend. I appreciate it.
Okay, our pleasure, dude. We'll talk soon. All right, we here at Jackalope want to pay our condolences to Kyra Shawn, who recently just lost her longtime companion, Spiffy, who had been with her for a good number of years. And anyone who's ever had a pet knows how, it really feels when, one departs. So we send out our condolences and our best wishes, and we'll have Kyra on pretty soon, too. So we're thinking of you. Don't forget, next week we're going to have actor and stuntman Gary Kent on about a film he just released, a very personal film called Rainy Day Friends, and that'll be next week, live.
All right, take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Okay, take
right, take bye. Care, Callum.
See you, Todd. See you.
Your dreams are all yours right here in the Grindhouse.
So grab yourself a seat.